the democratization of Braille. It's not a mistake, we meant it that way. To present this, we have the person who chairs the Royal National Institute of Blind People, coming to us from London, in the United Kingdom, a man with whom we've had conversations in the last year that suggest tremendous opportunities in international cooperation in entities dealing with blindness. Here is Kevin Carey.
Thank you very much. There you go. Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, colleagues and friends, first of all, let me thank you for receiving me here today. I'm deeply conscious of the honor and hope that you will not mind the frankness of a guest. It's my first time in Texas, and I'm very proud to be here. However, it's not my first time in the United States. I went to university in Harvard, and I'm still a keen supporter of the Boston Red Sox and New England Patriots. Well, it's better to talk on the field than off it. What I want to talk to you about today is that I feel that Braille is on the verge of a global catastrophe, as great as that which the music industry faced in the late 1990s, and as great as that which now is facing books, magazine, and newspaper publishers. And if we don't do something radical to save it, we, the baby boomers, will be the last generation to take Braille seriously. And I think there are five reasons for this, and you know they're not all bad, they're just the way it is. The first is the emergence of a huge amount of audio, originally on tapes and in books, but now there's an increase in spoken word broadcasting of high quality, particularly through the internet. The second is the decrease in the number of congenitally blind children with no other disabilities who were the bedrock of Braille reading in schools. The third is the one I'm going to spend most time on, and that is the mystification and professionalization of Braille teaching and the concentration on coding issues. The fourth is the exorbitant cost of Braille production and consumption. And the fifth is pressure on public sector and philanthropic budgets. There just ain't going to be the dough to do it. Now, if you look at those factors, I think the audio one is relatively simple. We all like and appreciate audio, but the great mistake is to think that audio is a proper educational substitute for learning Braille. We in our culture have a very special commitment to learning our tactile medium in the way that seeing people learn print, so that we can make sense of the book, particularly the novel, as the author talks to us without an intermediary. And what's more, it's pretty handy if you learn how to spell. On the topic of young children, in most developing countries, the number of blind children with no additional disabilities is falling, while the number of blind children with additional disabilities is rising. For the past 120 years, the life force behind Braille has been these congenitally blind children, and there's much less force behind that now. So the education system has to be much more alive to the Braille issues. But the third one's the big one. I use the term mystification to cover a large and complex problem area, but let me try to separate this into the following four elements: contracted Braille, single signs with multiple meanings, complex rules, and reversibility problems. And that's all a bit technical, but I'll boil it down to simple things in a minute. But this has meant that the major focus of Braille advocates and Braille authorities, teachers and publishers, has been on rather arcane coding issues when they might have concentrated their energies on something else, such as simplified coding and layout, teaching and learning materials, and promotion and marketing. Indeed, in recent months, I've received inquiries from some people in the poorest countries in the world asking me if they should set up a Braille authority when most of their kids don't have access to Braille. And this orientation means that the gateway to learning Braille has been operated by professionals instead of being an easy access, mass market product. Finally, on this subject of the problems, nobody contemplating the budgetary tribulations of California, and at the other extreme, the decision of South Korea to phase out all paper books in its education system by 2015, can doubt that the cost of Braille is going to put a lot of pressure on expenditure. My broad conceptual proposal for saving Braille is to democratize it, to take Braille out of the hands of professionals and put it into the hands of people. And to this end, I've got six proposals, which is default Braille to teaching uncontracted, provide code choices, promote multimodal self-tuition, but I'll do that in a minute, create a market in Braille products, promote end-user Braille embossing, and slash the cost of refreshable Braille. In turning to the two contemporary issues at the top of this list, I think that some people like me who've advocated simplification have been misunderstood. And I think there are two key words in the proposals that have got to be taken very seriously, and they are default and choice. At this point, I'm tempted to say, read my lips, but instead, I'll simply say as slowly and clearly as I can that I'm not proposing to abolish contracted Braille or to prevent anybody who wants to learn and use it from being taught and having access to text in it. But I am saying that educators should not automatically swallow huge quantities of curricular time insisting that blind children learn contracted Braille, but should consider it in the context of all the child's competing needs, in the context of the child's life chances. I suspect from my world travels that a lot of the time the promotion of contracted Braille depends upon the love of the teacher for it rather than the need of the student. Secondly, current information technology now allows us to give people a choice between contracted and uncontracted Braille, and I simply propose uncontracted because it's easier not only for some people who are struggling with it now, but that I have a great belief in the people who are out there who want to learn Braille but just find it too daunting and too difficult, and we want them in here. The second thing is about code choice, and first of all, I want to congratulate you on your absolutely courageous decision yesterday to go with Unified English Braille for the literary code. I first came into contact with this controversy with the proposals of Emerson Fork in 1989, and a quarter of a century is just long enough. So congratulations for that. I think that it's very important that you take that in its stead, that you do what you have to do with it, and that over a period of time people make a choice. As in England, I think there may be a case for you to have an inelegant solution over maths until it calms down. But for literary Braille, you want all the advantages that can come of a global market. And talking about markets, frankly, on both sides of the Atlantic, we've made fools of ourselves over these issues. What we've done is to make the mistake of the visual impairment sector down the ages. The same mistake we made over residential education and mainstreaming, the same mistake we made over sheltered and open employment, the same mistake we made over the relative merits of Braille and large print. And that is for one side to think that it has to have a total victory over the other side until we fight ourselves to a standstill. And I think you did a fantastic job yesterday in breaking that deadlock. How can it be that in the United Kingdom and the United States, with our belief in markets and choice, that we haven't allowed the market to show us a customer preference? The hand-to-hand fighting's over, and it's time to move on, which makes me wonder, and you perhaps, what Braille authorities are for. Well, I think that there are things that they can do that organizations of and for blind people can't do, like answering coding questions quickly. Secondly, promoting Braille. Thirdly, marketing Braille, so that we get a different orientation on it. Because I believe that the real problem with Braille is something in its history. And that is that it's often been seen as an elite subject, with Braille produced at high cost in publishing houses to a small number of people, and because of the contractions, it's been difficult to learn. And what we need to do is to make it a much simpler and more friendly proposition. So let me start with how you learn it. I want to begin this remark on what I call multimodal Braille, that is, learning to read dots with simultaneous support from speech and on-screen magnified print, by telling two stories. In a small school for blind children in the shadow of the Himalayas, I saw blind children like monks from the Middle Ages copying old Braille text with the stylus and frame, replicating previous mistakes and adding new ones. And at the other end of the spectrum, not very long ago, I went to the most advanced center for rehabilitation and training in the world, where there were newly partially sighted people in one room with their screens and their Braille displays and their synthetic speech, and they were doing very nicely. And the newly totally blind Braille readers were in a room on their own with a couple of bits of paper, like it was a punishment. And that can't be. So we need to get away from the idea that Braille is difficult to learn, supplied by a cartel of instructors, expensive, narrow in its product range, insensitive to consumer preference, and in some cases, like the one I've just mentioned, seen as a mark of failure. One way we can get around this that I think is very important is that instead of Braille being produced in printing houses, it's quite possible now for some of us to emboss at home. It might actually mean that we need a subsidy on Braille paper and a subsidy on Braille printers rather than the subsidy being eaten up in the Braille printing houses. But if I can use a scanner and produce a whole novel in my house in a day, what are the Braille houses doing? And finally, probably the single biggest obstacle to getting round hard copy Braille is the criminal price of refreshable Braille displays. This subject needs to be tackled on a global basis. We need an absolute technology breakthrough, and I'm pleased to say that your president, Dr. Mara, and I are of one mind. And the NFB in the United States and the Library of Congress and the Royal National Institute of Blind People in England are leading a global initiative to bust the market open so that the cost of Braille displays comes down by at least 75%. And we won't stop until we've done it. Which leads me, Mr. President, really to my conclusions. I believe that Braille has been the prisoner of a congenitally blind, highly educated elite for too long, and if it stays that way, it will die with us. But that if we are as passionate about its future as we are about its present and even its past, then we have a duty to do for Braille what the digital recorder did for music, and what the word processor did for publishing. The mistake of both industries was to see the future in terms of the past rather than its own terms, and they'll only fully recover when they see the new situation as an opportunity and not a threat. We should turn our tradition on its head and make Braille a consumer-focused entity, easy to learn, flexibly available, and responsive to market forces. We've spent far too long burying our heads in our code books, oblivious of the changing world which will not wait for us. In a manner which is repeated over and over again in history, we've adopted the classic defensive posture of the besieged, arguing over ever more arcane points as the enemy's grip tightens. It's time to break out. It is time to abandon old quarrels and let the citizen and the consumer decide. It's time to abandon old prejudices and read and respect research. It's time to recognize the new technologies for Braille production. And it's time to plan for an era when public sector expenditure will decrease and when philanthropy might falter. Above all, it's time to think of ourselves not as the custodians of a precious past, but as the advocates for an exciting future. We blind people on both sides of the Atlantic need to take Braille out of the hands of the professionals and into our own hands. We want to have the big say on the Braille authorities. We want to be able to simplify and to make cheap. Because if Braille isn't ours, it's nobody's. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it very much. Now, I've got two remarks here, Kevin. One is this. When I walk into a drugstore in the United States, I buy whatever I buy and I take it to my house and I get my Braille thing out and I put a little label on it so I know what it is. When I walk into a chemist shop in the UK, I buy my aspirin and it's already got Braille on it. Now, I want it to have Braille on it. I want more Braille. And I, for my part, care much less about exactly how it's written than that there's a lot of it. You write it any way you want to write it, and after a while, I'll know how to read it. You can count on that.